Hello, and welcome to There Are Other Ways, conversations about living life a little differently. I'm Fiona Bowers, a brand storyteller for small creative businesses. Hello, and welcome to the fourth episode of Season 2. In this week's episode, I'm chatting to potter Cara Lee Ford. I started following Cara on Instagram a little while ago now, and I love her ceramics inspired by the sea and her obvious infectious enthusiasm for pottery. I really enjoyed finding out more about her journey to becoming a potter, including how and why she applied for the Great Pottery Throwdown. We also spoke about the joy of making something both beautiful and useful, making money from your creativity, and the challenges of building and running your own small business. I loved chatting to her, and I really hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, Cara.
Hello. Hi, Fiona.
Thank you so much for talking to me today. I'm really looking forward to getting to know you a bit better.
Thank you for asking me. I'm really excited.
So whereabouts are you at the moment? Are you in your studio or?
I'm not. I'm actually in our spare bedroom in our cottage, just because it's got good internet in here. It's where my husband works from, so it's nice and quiet. He's not here at the moment. You'd be glad to know he's out. But yeah, and it's quite comfy and quite cozy. So I came in here to just, talk to you.
Nice. Right, well, for anyone who hasn't come across you online yet, would you mind just introducing yourself, saying a little bit about who you are and what you do and how you are living life a little differently?
Yeah, so I'm Cara Lee Ford, and I started my pottery business 3.5 years ago now. So I work from my garden studio in my home in Somerset, making stoneware, tableware, so mugs, plates, bowls, all of those things. I make everything on my potter's wheel myself. And I sell on my website and via Etsy. I guess I'm living life a little differently because there's more of us now, but there's not many potters in the world.
No.
I'm really a handful myself, but there are more of us. We're getting more popular. So,
Fantastic. And so you weren't always a potter. So maybe we kind of start at the beginning. So what were you doing before you kind of got into pottery?
So, yeah, I had a previous life before I was a potter.
We all do. So,
yes. So I worked, so when I left university, I worked in an office job. So I worked in marketing for about 10, 11 years.
Oh, wow. So
I worked for a shoe company, first of all, and I kind of worked my way up there. It was quite a small company. So I started at the very bottom as kind of marketing assistant, and then worked up to brand manager there. And then I worked briefly at a very well-known candle company as a visual merchandiser. So,
oh, interesting.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I did, not out of choice, but out of leaving university, having debts and bills to pay, and just thinking, what am I going to do now? This looks vaguely creative. I'll just apply for that. And then, 10 years later, still there thinking, what am I doing? This isn't what I did an art degree for.
I know that feeling very well.
So that was what I did before.
Yeah. So how did you then make the decision to leave the visual merchandising job?
It's quite a long story.
Okay. We've got time. I'm sitting comfortably.
So there was a lot of factors involved in my decision to make the leap. So I've already mentioned I went to university and did fine art. So I always kind of thought I wanted to work, creatively. I wanted to make things. I wanted to, for people to, get something from me, if you like, in terms of it be from me, not from someone else, or working for someone else, if you know what I mean. Does that make any sense?
I'm not sure. No, it does. It makes complete sense.
And then, so I always had this kind of like burning need to be creative. And that was always at the back of my mind, to just think, right, okay, I need to do this for a living. But they don't teach you how to do that at university. They teach you, you know, how to think about art, how to write about art, how to look at art, how to create art, but not how to sell it and not how to make a business out of it. You know, that was never a module when I went to university. It might be different now. I hope it is. I'm pretty sure it is, actually. But that was never a topic that was covered. It was just like, you know, you graduate and then you're off on your own and you just have to work out life.
I think it makes it mean that the people who make art are sort of like the select few, that it's sort of saying that the only way to make a living from your art is to be a fine artist, and there's only so many people who can do that, rather than the slightly more like democratic, you know, you can make a living from making stuff and selling it.
Definitely something that they should spend at least a year on that at university, and they just didn't in my time. But you know, it was a great degree anyway. I still enjoyed it. So that was kind of, you know, in me always wanting to be creative. And when I got the office job, I just thought, oh my goodness, this can't be it. This can't be what I'm destined to do for the rest of my life. So I started doing evening classes. I hadn't ever touched pottery before then. I'd always been a painter and printmaking, a little bit of photography, but I'd never had the opportunity to do pottery, because it always, even though my university offered it, it always kind of there was always a clash with one of my other modules, so I never ended up doing it. So I just thought, oh, I'd really fancy doing that, actually. So I just started doing it at evening classes. And from that first moment that I touched clay, I was like, oh, my goodness, where has this been all of my creative life? I wish I'd found this before. So I was absolutely hooked from the get-go, really. And then as time went on, I just kept going back to the evening classes, kept enrolling, you know, looking at learning things online, reading books, going on different courses, on glazing courses, on sculpture courses, and all sorts of, you know, trying to get every last bit of information I could about pottery. I was just absolutely besotted with it, absolutely bonkers about it. And as, you know, at the same time, still doing my office job. And I slowly started building up, you know, a little home studio. I bought a secondhand wheel. I bought, you know, lots of bits and bobs that you need to be able to do it at home. I didn't have a kiln at that point. You know, the years went by and I just kept it as a hobby, kept doing it every now and again. Sometimes I'd go months without doing it just because I was so exhausted from working.
Of course.
Didn't have any energy left to do anything creative. So, you know, the wheel stood in our dining room, as it were, back then. kind of I became progressively more unhappy in my job, I'd say. I think, you know, as you think you're, you know, the next pay grade up, you think, oh, I'll be happier then. That'll make a difference. You know, more responsibility, or that'll help me, that'll make me feel happier. And I just never was. I just had this feeling that I was always just like, why am I doing this? I don't understand. I've trapped myself here. I don't know how, but I've trapped myself. And that's how I felt for a really long time. Very dear friend of ours, my husband and I's mutual friend, actually got diagnosed with cancer the age of 30. And that was just horrendous, as you can imagine.
Of course.
And he was just so supportive, and just, you know, always telling me, Cara, just quit, just do pottery, you know, you're good, just do it, just life's too short. He didn't make it. He died, which was an absolute devastation for my husband and I and our friends, and you know, he had a wife and a baby, and it was just awful time for everyone. And it, you know, those kind of things make you really reevaluate stuff and make you think, right, what am I doing here? This is not okay. Alex didn't get the chance to have a life. I do. I've got to make the most of it. I can't do this anymore. Kind of at the same time, which is a little bit of a tangent, there was a BBC Two program called The Great Pottery Throwdown. I don't know.
Yeah. I never watched it. I never got as into it as I did, as I have done the Bake Off, obviously, but I have watched a few episodes. Yeah.
So it's made by the same company as Bake Off. Mm. And I saw an advert in my local pottery supplier, and I was just like, do you know what? I'm just going to apply. What have I got to lose? It was a really low point in my life at that point. Alex had passed away. My job just was not, you know, wasn't thrilling me. It was the opposite, in fact. So I applied and I sent off my, you know, they ask you like a few questions and they want a few pictures of your work. And I sent it off and I was so, well, you know, probably never hear back. And I got a call the next day from the production company saying, would you like to come to London? We'd like to meet you.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I was just like, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So I did, went to London. I told my boss that I had an earache, as you do. And yeah, I went to the audition and then got called back again and then got called back again. And I got down to the final like 20 auditionees, which is just astounding for me. I was just like, you're joking. You know, I'm not like, I do this as a hobby. Like, it was just crazy. It was just really, really crazy. And the one thing that really kind of spurred me on doing the Great Pottery Throwdown was meeting all the other potters there. Mm-hmm. I'd never met another potter apart from the local pottery supplier that is quite close to me. I'd never met another potter in real life who actually made a living from their work. And to be surrounded by, you know, 20 of them was just like incredible.
So were the people who were the other contestants, were they all professional potters?
Yeah, they were all full-time potters or making some kind of, you know, living from their pottery. So whether that would have been teaching it, or I remember one of the ladies there was, she owned a paint your own pottery shop.
Oh, cool.
And there was another lady there who was like an art therapist, and she specialised in working with pottery. So it was all these amazing people making a living from their passion. And it just proved to me that, you know, it's possible. You can do this. Like, people do this for a living. And it was just so eye-opening. And I was the only one in that room that wasn't. I was the only one who had a full-time, you know, job that wasn't pottery. And, you know, when I asked people in that room, just like, so what do you do? And they were like, well, I'm a potter. And they looked at me like, well, what do you do? And I was like, oh, I'm a visual merchandiser. They kind of like were like, right, okay, so what are you doing here? And yeah, that was kind of a really big push for me as well. We also bought our house at the same time, which had a purpose-built little garden studio in the back garden. Wow. So that was another thing which just like, oh my gosh, you know, I had the space now, I could buy my own kiln. There was just loads of things that the universe kind of like threw at me all in the space of like 6 months, which was just like, you know, Cara, if you're ignoring these signs, then you really are deaf and dumb. You need to just get on this. So there you go. I handed in my notice. I think it was in March 2015.
Okay.
And, you know, stopped work on the Monday and started work as a potter. Stopped work on the Friday, sorry, and started work as a potter on the Monday.
Wow. That's amazing. That's such an amazing story. And it is something that does come up quite a lot of people say that making the change was a lot of different factors that kind of all came together at the right time, and that just made it, you know, that they just were like, this is it. It's either now or never. So yeah, so that's amazing. Well, I had no idea about the Great Pottery Throwdown with you.
Yeah, it's a bit of a crazy one. I didn't get on the show, I have to say. I wasn't chosen for the show, which was actually fine because I'm quite an introvert, really. Yeah. So I didn't really cope very well with the camera being right up in my grill. That wasn't a nice feeling for me. So even though it's a great experience, I'm actually secretly pleased that I didn't get on the program, because I think it, looking at how it was, portrayed on TV, I think there was a lot of things in there that, you know, they were hammed up for the cameras, if you like. You know, the drama was made a little bit more intense than it probably is really in the life of a potter. So, yeah.
Well, it's the same thing with a Bake Off as well. You get sort of the dramatic music and and everything. So yeah, so yeah. I can see
cakes and, you know, the things that people drop, and they probably never do that at home, but they kind of, you know, they hand that up for the cameras, don't they?
Exactly. Make the stakes a bit higher. Like, is that crack going to
Yeah,
absolutely. So you mentioned about like the first time that you touched Claire, and I think you've actually written an Instagram post about this a bit recently as well.
Yeah.
Which I really love, because I remember really clearly the second, like, I did quite a lot of pottery at school. I just really loved it. I just did pardon?
Who doesn't love it?
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing. And then I didn't touch clay for, like, I don't know, 10 years or so. And I went to a class I lived in Bali for a year, and I went to a class out there, and I can remember touching clay for the first time again then.
Yeah.
And the feel of it, and just thinking, what, like, just being like, just remembering how good it feels, and it all kind of coming back to me and thinking, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah. Was that at Gaia Ceramics in Bali?
It was, yes. Yes. Have you been there?
I have, yeah. Yeah, that's another thing that you and I have got in common. I spent some time in Bali as well.
When were you there?
Yeah, Gaia's amazing. It's such an incredible place, such a beautiful studio as well.
It's absolutely gorgeous. When were you out in Bali?
So we went this year in June, and then we've been a couple of years ago as well. We kind of just went to a few different stops. We didn't spend as long as you did, but we kind of explored quite a lot and just absolutely fell in love with it. It's just one of those magical places that's just going to stay with me forever. It's just incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, me too. That's so weird that there's so many synchronicities between us, because we also don't live too far apart either.
No, 20 minutes away. Yeah.
Yeah,
funny.
So what is it about pottery that you love so much?
Oh, my goodness. It's such an incredible material. I mean, it's halfway between alchemy, physics, chemistry, and art. Mm-hmm. There's the element of surprise, which I love. You know, you never get that with painting. There's no kind of real element of surprise. It's all very much under your control. Mm-hmm. And I love that element of, you know, it's about the heat, it's about the chemicals, the reactions that happen in the kiln, and you're never really 100% in control of that. There's always something which is a little bit, you know, left to chance, and that really intrigues me and always will. And every time I open the kiln, it's an education, and it's a surprise, and it's like Christmas morning. Mm. So I love that aspect of it. It's also very meditative. Meditative? Did I say that? Meditative.
Yeah, that's right, I think. That's how I would say it.
Yes. So when, you know, especially when you're throwing on the wheel, you really can't think about anything else. Your mind has to be completely clear. And it's a real kind of moment where your brain and your body like link together, and it is lots of people have said this before, but pottery is the new yoga. I have to say, it is definitely the new yoga. It's just such a beautiful way to spend a few hours, you know, and I'm so lucky that I get to do it every day, so I feel so privileged. And then you can make something useful out of it as well. You know, you can drink out of something that you've just pulled out of a kiln. How incredible is that? I still can't get my head around the fact that you know, you can make something that's beautiful but also usable and functional. And I just think it's the most incredible thing ever, 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 ever.
I don't blame you. I did a, is it Raku firing?
Yeah.
I went to a workshop at the place I go to in Froom the other day, and that really is a complete surprise because you just have no really idea.
Yes. Yeah, Raku's really exciting actually because it happens very quickly. So you can kind of do it in, you know, you can do it in a day workshop if you know, you've got all the equipment there, which is incredible because normally, obviously, you have to fire pottery. The pottery that I use is stoneware, and you normally have to fire that twice. Mm. And those firings take 24 hours each. But Raku is very instant. So you fire the kiln very quickly up to a lower temperature than normal. And then you don't wait for the kiln to cool down like you would normally. You pull out the pottery when it's still red hot and you put it in, you know, something combustible like wood chip or newspaper or something.
Yeah.
And the interaction between the carbon in the paper or the wood chip or whatever material you put it in, that then gives you the colour on the outside of the vessel, so that'll interact with the glazes that you've used and give you those fantastic patterns that you know you can never reproduce those, even no matter how hard you try, you'll never get the same thing ever again, which is just it's a great firing method.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And I really like what you say about sort of making something useful as well, because it sort of goes back a little bit to what we were talking about earlier about sort of art as fine art as opposed to art that sort of people interact with on a daily basis.
And
it's so lovely. Like, I bought a really lovely mug from a friend of mine at the last Froom Independent market. And every time I drink my morning coffee from it, and I swear it makes my coffee taste better. And I just love it, and I love that it's that sort of feeling in the, you know, it's just such a, it makes sort of a morning coffee, which could be sort of really mundane and kind of, you know, just something you've just got to, you just drink, gulp down quickly, into like a really lovely experience. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. When you drink or, you know, eat of something that's handmade, and it is a completely different experience than, you know, drinking out of something from, I don't know, IKEA.
Yeah.
Because it makes you kind of think about the person that made that item, and you know, you can kind of see their imprint on it, if you like. And it's just that, again, makes you, I think, more mindful about when you're eating or drinking, is, you know, you stop for a minute and you just kind of, think about that person that made that thing. And it is a totally unique experience to do that. And I definitely would suggest anyone to start getting rid of all of their supermarket IKEA mugs and, you know, start slowly collecting mugs from makers, because every time you open your cupboard to make a cup of tea, it's a joy. And you know, you think, oh, that was so and so, or that was so and so, and I bought that when I went here, and you know, I really like that one because of the way it was made and the colors used. And yeah, it's totally different than just, you know, regular old like mugs that come out from a factory.
Yeah, absolutely. And you said at the beginning that it didn't feel like there were many potters at the time, but now it definitely feels like it's now something. I don't know whether it's also just because that's sort of the world that I'm an online creator, so I spend a lot of time on Instagram, and I see. I don't know whether it's because they're sort of in front of me because of where I choose to hang out online a bit more, but it definitely feels like a growing industry, I guess.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't know whether it is because obviously we frequent the same kind of small little Instagram bubble, which is full of creatives, and a lot of those are potters. But I think there has been a big resurgence in pottery in the last decade, maybe since the recession. I think people really crave that, getting back to those real craft. You know, things they can do with their hands. Like knitting has become like a massive resurgence of knitters and crocheters. And
I've just started doing macrame, which is like the new big thing in Froome. Everyone's doing it.
Is it? Yeah, I love a bit of macrame. I can't do it, but I like buying it.
No, I really enjoy doing it.
It's fantastic. I think, you know, during the 70s, there was a lot of ceramics in schools. But then something happened, and I don't know whether it was insurance or the cost of, you know, running the kilns just got too expensive for schools. But schools gradually started shutting down their ceramic departments and selling off all of their kit. And then children just never got to do it. So, you know, you're lucky that you got to do it at your school. I think then that kind of made it die out for, you know, a good couple of decades, because people just didn't ever have the chance to try it. And now it's just slowly coming back, and, you know, workshops and learning pottery courses are just selling out. I know that our local college, Bath College, has got a waiting list for their pottery courses.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. It's back to vengeance.
I guess it's also part of the sort of the whole movement as well, to people being able, as we said, people being able to sell stuff online and sell stuff themselves and be able to make a living from the stuff that they're making because of the internet and Instagram and how much easier it is, and how you can now start off with, you know, you don't need a shop front. You don't need to pay for a shop on a high street anymore. You can just sell out of your living room or studio or what have you.
Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah, I don't know how I would be able to be making ends meet if it wasn't for, you know, the internet and Instagram. They are amazing at kind of letting people run their small craft businesses from their homes. That's definitely a key to it becoming more popular and more, you know, achievable as well.
And you say on your website that you always felt like a potter was something that other people did. Why do you think that was?
I think mainly because I'd never met one. I'd never come across one before. Until I started, you know, going to evening classes, the tutor there obviously was a potter, and that was the first potter I'd ever met, and I just never come across them. And I was just like, it always felt like, you know, that elusive thing that you see someone does, makes a living from something, and you just think, oh my goodness, that just looks so incredible and such a wonderful lifestyle. And it is a lifestyle. Being a potter is definitely a lifestyle choice rather than just a job. It's definitely not just a job.
Of course.
And it was just, you know, it seemed so magical. But in a way that was like, you know, there's so many different factors that you have to think about when being a potter. It just seemed like so elusive that it never felt like it was an option for me. It never felt like it was something that was possible. And then, as I said, when I met all of those other potters at the Great Pottery Throwdown auditions, you know, they were there, they were doing it. They were like, yeah, you know, you can do it. Like, it's not hard. If we can do it, you can do it. And I was kind of like, really? Okay, well, I'll give it a go then.
So that kind of leads us on to sort of the business side of things, I guess. How are you making that work, and how have you found sort of that side of things?
Oh, goodness me. Well, that's been a learning curve. If ever there was one. So looking back now, with hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it? Looking back now, I literally had no business plan at all when I first started. I was kind of at a point in my life where it was like, you know, the fear of staying where I was greater than the fear of failing.
Yeah, the tipping point.
So I didn't really put a lot of planning in, to be honest, which looking back now wasn't the best idea. I thought about it a lot, and I'd done a lot of budgeting spreadsheets, but the actual business planning side of things, I didn't have a business plan. I didn't really know what I had to do to, you know, make money. I knew that I needed to make things, and I knew I needed to sell them. So that was basically it. And that's what I did. I started making things. I started taking photos of them. And I started up my own Etsy shop. That was that's another channel that it had such a great help to people who want to kind of make a creative living for themselves. And I just made a lot of mistakes and learned a lot of lessons along the way. And I'm still learning those lessons. Mm. Business is hard.
It really is. And I think especially as so many people get into creative businesses because of the creative side of it and want to make a living. And most people who have creative businesses are creatives. And I really don't like the kind of assumption that just because you're creative, you're not good at business, because I think that ultimately business is creative. Problem solving, and it's coming up with ideas, and it's connecting to people. Yeah. But it is a completely different skill set and a completely different way of looking at your work, I think.
It really is. Yeah, it totally is. I mean, there was things from my previous job. So obviously working in marketing, that really, really did help me because I understood, the concept of building a brand and, photographing products and writing product descriptions. I did that as part of my marketing job. So that really helped me and kind of gave me an edge that I think if I hadn't have done that, then I literally would have been on ground zero. But there's the other side of, accounting and tax and, that kind of thing, financial planning and all of those things that I'm still kind of getting to grips with now. I'm still not 100% on all of those things.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not either.
Yeah, you just kind of think, there's things that you're never going to be interested in and very good at, and I think one thing that I've kind of learned over the years is to delegate. And when you don't have that key skill or you don't have the interest to do something, is to ask or pay someone else to do it for you, because I just wouldn't be able to do my accounts if it wasn't for my accountant.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing about, and I wrote something about this quite recently, that as a one man or one woman band, like, you kind of have to do everything, particularly at the beginning. And in no other, like, in a job, you're hired on the basis of your skills normally, like your specific skill set. And then you kind of develop those skills sort of in the same direction. And obviously, when you work for yourself and you run your own business, you have to do all these other things that are just totally outside of your skill set. I've struggled through so much of that, and it is really hard, and you do kind of, and some of it you kind of learn and pick up and kind of find that you're able to do, and others you just get to the point where you're like, as soon as I've got the money, I'm just paying someone.
Totally. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, there's things like, putting yourself out there on social media is quite difficult when you've never done that before and you've not had to do that. Like, normal people don't have to talk about themselves every day on social media, do they?
No.
They don't have to. Some of them do.
Some of them choose to.
But you don't, it's kind of a thing that you have to do that when you run your own business. You have to get comfortable at talking about, what you've been doing that day and, where your business is going and all of those types of things. And even, putting a photograph of yourself on Instagram, for some people can be really difficult and could be a real, blocker. And that's something that I've kind of had to work through, really, is I am a natural introvert, and I've had to kind of train myself to become an extroverted introvert, if that makes sense.
No, it completely does, because I'm very similar and I find the sort of putting myself up online really difficult. Yeah. And I have to really push myself to do it.
You do it really well, and you would never guess that you were, you felt like that. It feels natural. And
oh, thank you.
Yeah, I really enjoy watching your stories, so
thank you. But what you don't see is that afterwards I'm like hiding away, like my face burning red, like, oh, did I just say that? Oh, that was awful. And then I just sort of have to put my phone down and not look at it for a few hours. You kind of have to post, and then I do a lot of posting and then walking away.
Yeah, you have to do that sometimes. You just have to do that and not overanalyze it as well, and just saying, people generally are you know, they're rooting for you. That's what I found anyways. And they're cheering you on. And, you know, the people that aren't doing that and maybe who are being a bit mean, you kind of, you don't want those people to follow you anyway. So, you know, I think you just got to remind yourself that, you know, people aren't going to be looking at, you know, I don't know, how the spot on your chin that you got that day, or, you know, when you stumble over your words, people generally are quite forgiving. That's what I've found anyway.
Yeah, it's a nice thing to kind of keep in your mind. Yeah. And it seems like this year your business has sort of stepped up a notch. You just bought a shed to host workshops in, is that right?
Did, yes. Exciting. Yeah, right. It has. I've kind of, you know, a lot of people when they start businesses, they put a lot of investment in the first year or so. And I didn't do that because I had my kind of equipment already just from, you know, over the years of building it up gradually as a hobby. So I didn't really have that big output in the beginning. But as I kind of progressed, I was originally working from a 6-foot by 13-foot shed in our garden.
Okay.
Which was fantastic for the first, you know, couple of years. But I have seriously outgrown it now. And there's only so much a potter can produce with limited space. Just, you know, practical things like drying things. And, you know, I needed a second kiln and there was nowhere for that to go. So I decided to buy a log cabin for our garden.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. And this is, so I call it my shed of dreams, hashtag shed of dreams. I have been dreaming about this for years, since even before I became a potter, was to, you know, have like a dedicated space that would be mine, that would be my creative oasis, and I could, you know, have everything in there and it just be purpose built. So my original shed wasn't purpose built. It was like, I think the person that used it before was a graphic designer. So it had carpet in and it had, you know, there's no water in there. And it was
not ideal.
Yeah, quite unpractical to be a potter. So this is a purpose built log cabin, which is 3 meters by 4 meters. So it's still, you know, it's big in comparison to my old one, but it's still not massive. It's still bijou in, you know, in the world of pottery, but it's fantastic because it means that I now have two wheels and I have a big workbench, and I can actually invite people into my studio to have to come on little intimate workshops with me. And it means I can, you know, I can share my passion for pottery with other people, which I couldn't really do in my tiny, tiny shed.
It would have been very, very intimate.
yeah, exactly. And, you know, I swiftly discovered that there's only so many mugs one potter can make on their own. And in order for me to kind of take my business to the next level, I needed to get an income from something else that wasn't just how many mugs I could produce. And that is, you know, part of that is going to be teaching. So yeah, that's kind of where my business is at the present time.
It seems really clever to do it that way. And I do think that's how quite a few people sort of do earn on the side. Because as you say, like how much you can make as one person is there's a ceiling to that. There's only so much that you can make. And especially when you have other limiting factors like kiln space and drying space and everything else. So that's really exciting.
Sorry, I interrupted you there.
No, it's okay. I couldn't quite hear you. But yes, so it's really exciting.
Yeah, sorry. And I was just going to say, in your body as well, like, because pottery is a very physical thing. And, you know, there's only so much clay someone can throw in a week without injuring themselves or giving, you know, getting repetitive strain injury, or, you know, you really have to kind of look after the physical side of yourself as well when you're a potter. So in order to not get physical burnout, you have to kind of, you know, I find that I have to do something else to break up the week so that I'm not just throwing, you know, pot after pot after pot after pot, because there is a physical limit as well.
Yeah, it's tiring. I do a 2-hour pottery class, and my arms, I'm exhausted afterwards. It's quite on the shoulders and your back as well, because you're kind of hunched over.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, it can be very physically demanding.
And so going back a bit to your pottery itself, what is the inspiration for your pieces? I think you say that it's inspired by where you grew up, which is on the coast.
Yeah, so I'm originally from Devon.
Oh, lovely.
South Devon, and my family still live there. I've got lots of friends still there, so I still go back there a lot. But my kind of happy childhood place is the beaches of South Devon. So some people might be familiar with Bantham, Bigbury, Mothercombe, all of these places. That's where me and my family used to spend our weekends, just kind of whiling away, under the summer sun, in the rock pools and walking along the coast. And that really, really is my happy place. Apart from in my studio, of course. Mm. So all of my pottery is inspired by the textures and colours of those beaches and that coastline, and the kind of changing moods of the ocean. That's very much where my colour choices come from, and the textures I use, and some of the shapes as well.
You can totally see that in your work, and I think as well you also get that, as you say, it's your happy place. I think that comes through as well, because I think there's something very joyful about your pieces, and very calming as well, but they feel happy.
Thank you, that's lovely. That's really lovely to hear.
I love them. I think they're great.
So
I ask all my guests, what has been the hardest thing for you about living life a little differently?
The hardest thing for me is to be strict with myself and say no to things. So when you kind of love what you do and really excited about it, and then someone asks you, oh, can you make me this? I'm like, oh yeah, of course I can. And then I completely undervalue my work, as a lot of creatives do. I don't charge enough for it, and I end up spending, you know, three times the amount of time that I would spend on something else, and I wouldn't make any money out of it. So I think the hardest thing for me is to say no to commissions or requests from people, just because I love kind of people asking me to make them something. It's really flattering when someone asks you to make them something, but I've learned over the years that often it doesn't pay, and it's quite stressful. And you know, even though 99% of the time it ends up that they're thrilled with it, the process for me has not been a positive or in monetary terms, it hasn't been viable.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. And I think valuing your work is really hard, because it's so easy to undervalue it, because it's also that quote, isn't it, that it takes, how long does it take to throw a pot? Sort of 15 minutes and 30 years or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think pottery is, there's quite a lot of misunderstanding around how long things take to make in pottery. And yeah, it's true that it takes probably me about 3 minutes to throw a pot on the wheel, but then there, it takes about 2 weeks for that pot to dry. And then, you know, you've got to equate all the firings, and then that pot might explode in the kiln. So even after all of that effort, you might end up with nothing. And yeah, you're right about the 30 years. You know, it's only the experience that you gather when making every day that kind of gives you the knowledge to avoid those explosions and the dramas that happen, and you know, the failures and all of those things. So
and what has been the best thing for you?
The best thing for me has been the freedom that it's given me. As I said before, pottery is very much a lifestyle choice. It's not a job. And the freedom that being a potter has given me is just incredible. Even though I work harder than I've ever worked in my life now, I've been working, building my new studio has meant that I've been working, 12-hour days for the last I don't know, 3 months.
Wow.
So that's been pretty intense because obviously I've been managing the studio build as well as trying to fill orders and doing everything else I've been doing before that. So that's been really intense, but it still gives me a sense of freedom that I never had from going to a 9-to-5 job. And that really has been the best thing for me.
Yeah, amazing. And Carl, where can people find you online and where can they find out about sort of ordering from you and your workshops and stuff as well?
Yeah, so you can find me online at my website, which is CaraLeeFordCeramics.com. And that's Cara with a K and Lee, L-E-I-G-H, FordCeramics.com. All of my workshops and my shop are all kind of all in one place and my blog as well. So you can have a good old route round there. And I'm on Instagram at CaraLeeCeramics. I am on Facebook and Twitter as well, but I don't really do a lot.
No,
so my kind of like stomping ground, really.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm on there, but I don't really do much with them.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Carl, thank you so much for talking to me today. I'm really looking forward to coming and coming to your studio at some point and having a workshop with you. And
yay! I'm excited.
I'd really love to learn from you. So, and thank you so much for talking to me. It's been a really great conversation.
Thank you, Fiona. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, then I would absolutely love it if you could rate, review and subscribe to this podcast. It really does help put it in front of other people who might like it. If you'd like to join in the conversation, then please do come find me over on Instagram. I'm at fbarrows, where I'm always talking about these sorts of subjects and would love to hear from you. You can also find out more about the work that I do, helping small creative businesses clarify their message and tell their brand story on my website, www.fionabarrows.com, where you can also subscribe to my weekly newsletter, Letter and Notes, in which I share stories and insights from my own experience in living life a little differently. Until next time.